So I have a 21-month-old. She's not a great sleeper. She wakes up a lot at night. And I just went to the person you go to, which is your mom. And I'm like, Mom, how did you fix this? And she said, I don't know. You just grew up. Where did we sleep? She said, with us in bed. And I said, well, how did we move out of your bed? She said, you grew up. That's the only answer you're going to give me. That's not very helpful, my friend.
This is Marilyn.
And I'm Rhea.
And you're listening to Who Run the World, a podcast where two Arab women and best friends come together to talk about what's on their mind and the mind of their peers today. And this is an episode of our spin-off series, Things My Mother Didn't Tell Me, But My Best Friend Did, where we talk about the things we don't talk about. And today, Razi, and every day for the last couple of years, there is something that has been on my mind for lack of having it. And that, my dear friend, is sleep.
Now, I would like to caveat this episode by saying this is not going to be a snooze fest because we're talking about sleep.
That's a good one, Rhea. Indeed, dear audience, you will not be able to use this episode to fall asleep. But we are here to talk about the sleep of our little ones.
Of the children. Hala, I don't have a child, so I can't speak much about...
But you are a child.
Okay, so I'm not a child because I don't need no sleep training. And that is what we are going to be talking about this episode is how to sleep train your child or what to do when you have a child that is not sleeping very well and how can you sleep train them?
Totally.
Why are we talking about this, Marilyn? You alluded to it a little bit at the top of the show. Can you tell us about your daughter's sleep and your sleep as a consequence?
So, you know, first-time parents will receive the same advice from a lot of people. Oftentimes, one of those pieces of advice that they receive is like, sleep now, you're never going to sleep again. When you receive it before you've had a child, you kind of just shrug. Whatever, my kid is not going to be like that. I don't know about you guys. You were not in control. You didn't know what you were doing. Surely, I will not have this problem, but thank you for thinking of me. And then lo and behold, you do, inshallah, have a good, healthy child. And they indeed don't like to sleep whenever you need them to, and ruin your life. Some of us are lucky enough to have children that past the first few months end up sleeping really well and they go back to like normal sleep. But some of us, and in fact, most of us don't. And the data really shows that more than half of children will continue waking up at least once until they're way into being 6 or 7 or 8 years old, that it's perfectly normal, that most kids don't sleep on their own. But we are bombarded with the stories of parents and children who have complete independence in falling asleep and stay asleep until the morning. And you can't help but feeling like you're failing as a parent.
First of all, you're not failing as a parent since a lot of parents go through this.
Thanks, Rhea.
You're welcome. But I find it interesting that sleep is not something that comes to mind as something you need to train for. One would think, oh, you're tired and you're super sleepy. Go to sleep.
Go to bed.
Right? Just close your eyes and poof, you're sleeping. And children and toddlers and some adults need some help in that department. And we don't think about it until we have to think about it, right? So I hadn't thought about it till you were going through it with Gabby and be like, oh, wow, like you need to practice sleeping or practice sleeping independently. Mm-hmm. How has that practice gone for you? Or where are you at now actually in that journey?
You bring up a great point about not realizing that sleep requires training. And we don't really think about it because we grew up in a relatively safe and abundant world. If all you've ever known for your entire existence is the warmth and safety and coziness of your mother's womb, and you're thrown into the world with all of its sounds and noises and new people and new experiences, there's a lot about the world that is scary to you. And actually, I think that at that age, sleep isn't just about being tired. It also has to do with feeling safe. Think of when you and I went camping and we slept in that tent. We were constantly on high alert. We didn't really get any restful sleep. And I imagine that that's what kids experience mostly. And so it isn't that obvious. And I think different kids obviously have different energy levels during the day, illnesses or disease that's making it even harder. There may be no reason at all that just causes them not to be great sleepers. And it's really not something we talk a lot about. My mother certainly didn't tell me about any of this. In fact, when I asked her for any piece of advice, she literally had none. Gabby kind of falls somewhere in the middle. She's neither the worst sleeper nor the best. She still wakes up at least once a night, usually more, and requires us to co-sleep as of her second wake up. Otherwise, she will continue waking up every 2 hours. So it hasn't been easy. And that's also why we've had a lot of those discussions. But this idea of sleep training somehow is a relatively recent idea, I think. And we do touch on it with our guest later, but mostly because of being a parent and the support system that you have, but also the level of busyness that we all experience has meant that we have less time to fill our kids' safety and emotional buckets. And so we also need them to sleep more because we're more tired. It's kind of caused a whole big new wave of things that we now have to deal with.
At what moment did you realize that you need to tap into some sleep training for Gabby? Was there a morning of exhaustion where you're like, I can't do this anymore? Was it that you felt that she was tired or she could only sleep in a certain environment and you're like, okay, we need to change this up for her? So at what moment did you realize, okay, I got to do something? And what did you do?
I think it must have been at a moment where I felt particularly exhausted, where it had been more than X nights that her sleep had been very disrupted. I know many mothers or parents who also have reached out to me at that very moment and been like, I can't do this anymore. What did you do? And did it work? Now, I will also say that I have not sleep trained Gabby in the ways that a lot of people understand sleep training to be. I haven't done anything particularly radical. I'm completely against cry-based methods. I would never willingly do something that makes my daughter feel left alone in this world. And so I have not actually sleep trained Gabby. But what I did do is go and educate myself about what facilitates sleep, what makes kids sleep better. How can I help her acquire the tools that she needs to provide safety for herself and build a good routine and try to integrate some of the elements of those, whether they were books or articles or whatever, that I as a parent felt comfortable with? There are many more extreme versions of sleep training. I'm just never going to be the parent who adheres to them, but I know parents who have, and that's their choice.
So we're going to learn a lot about what are the different mechanisms that a parent can use in order to help sleep train their baby. But the information will not come, certainly not from me and not from you, even though you have more experience than me. We've invited a very special guest to come on Who Run the World and tell us all about sleep training. Can you please intro who we're about to talk to?
So our guest today is the founder of One to Sleep Consulting, based in Abu Dhabi in the UAE. She's passionate about helping families achieve better sleep quality by providing them with the right tools to establish a healthy sleep foundation for their children. Our guest's journey into sleep consulting began with her own personal experience following the birth of her first son, Maher, which led her to deeply understand the importance of sleep for lack of it. Her desire to help other families overcome sleep-related challenges drove her to undergo over 250 hours of classes and practical training through the Family Sleep Institute, a leader in the industry, and develop extensive experience in this area. And so we're quite thrilled to have Lamise Benjelloun joining us today. Lamise, I have been wanting to do this episode for a very long time. I'm incredibly grateful that you joined us here today to talk about our daughters and sons' sleep.
Thank you. Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you, Rhea, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Rhea is also very excited to learn how she can sleep better as an adult. So I think everyone should be excited to learn how they can better sleep.
Absolutely.
Lamise, thank you so much for being with us on here. We love the fact that you're so generous with your knowledge and sharing, you know, best practices around sleep for children, whether it be for parents or caregivers, through your own practice, but also on social media. So we were just curious to know, what made you so passionate about spreading the word about sleep and getting into sleep in the first place. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's my eldest, my son Meher. He's the reason. I loved sleep. I've always loved sleep. My mom told me at some point that I slept through the night from the day I came home from the hospital. I think she might be forgetting some nights, but but I just didn't worry about that. You know, when I was pregnant, I bought all the books except the sleep. I was like, yeah, there's no way my son's not going to sleep. I just didn't think it was going to be a problem. And it was. It was a huge problem. And so I did what I do best. I did research, got on all the sites, got all the books, got everything, and asked my friends and did all that a desperate mom does when she finds herself in those shoes. And we fixed it. We really did. We fixed it. It was right before I went back to work. Our life changed pretty much overnight, literally changed. And so I started shouting it from the rooftop. If you figure out their sleep, they're going to sleep. Everything's going to be okay. Everything else is going to be fine. And I started saying that. And I would just share with my friends what I found out. And then fast forward a few years, my second son was born. I wasn't working at the time. We had just moved to Abu Dhabi. And I kind of was like, okay, I'll do the baby led thing. I'll let him figure it out. And then I found out that, no, he didn't figure it out, you know? And so I found myself at a crossroad at the time. And I was like, okay, I can make this something. You know, I found out that I could actually help other parents. And for me, the important thing is I do work one-on-one with families. I do get paid for what I do. But the more digestible the information can be for parents, the easier it is, because the internet is full of stuff. And so if I can make it just a little bit easier, people might be able to work their way through it like I did when I was in their shoe.
Yeah. So I have a 21-month-old. She's not a great sleeper. She wakes up a lot at night. And I just went to the person you go to, which is your mom. And I'm like, Mom, how did you fix this? And she said, I don't know. You just grew up. Where did we sleep? She said, with us in bed. And I said, well, how did we move out of your bed? She said, you grew up. That's the only answer you're going to give me. That's not very helpful, my friend. I'm sure you meet parents like me. I'm not comfortable with cry it out method. I'm not capable of inflicting what I perceive to be pain or anxiety or anguish on my daughter. But I am curious because, as you say, TikTok is rife with all this content and you don't know how to separate good from bad. And I think maybe we can just start with a very, very simple question, but I don't think anybody answers it. It is, what does sleep training actually mean?
That's a good question. Sleep training can mean a lot of things, actually, depending on what your goal as a mom is, really. I've worked with families that are fine if their kid in the middle of the night comes into bed and sleeps the rest of the night with them, but they want him to start in his bed and they want him to fall asleep on his own. I've worked with parents who want none of that. There is a wide range of what parents perceive as good sleep, as long as it's restful for them. In more technical terms, sleep training is teaching your child to sleep independently, to completely rely on themselves to fall asleep. Because we have this misconception, at least in my community, is like, how do I make my baby fall asleep? And you can't really make anybody fall asleep. You can just offer them the opportunity to fall asleep, and you can offer them the tools to do that. And with sleep training, we do that. It's a puzzle. I like to look at it as a puzzle. One piece of it is, yes, the independent sleep, but that's usually the last piece that we tag on. Another piece is the schedule. We have to respect the child's needs at their certain age. So we have to meet them where developmentally they are. Another piece is where they're sleeping. Are we setting them up for success by creating a little haven where they can sleep in and that can help them sleep? How are they eating? How often are they eating well during the day so that we can rely on that for the rest of the night? Routines. Children love routines. It kind of gives them a little sense of I'm not being plopped from place to place. I know that I'm going to do this next. And that helps them kind of mentally prepare for sleep.
I love your definition because I do think that every family has their own perception on what is good for them. And I love that there's not that military approach. I've seen a lot of this, like your kid needs to sleep alone and independence is really important. And I don't think of myself as a soft parent particularly. I do want to have good context and discipline for my child. But I also, sometimes I think that the reason why sleep training is so popular is because the way the modern world is constructed, we just don't have the ability to deal with children's sleep patterns as we used to. And even this idea that children have their own room, to me, it's a consequence of abundance. I think that 50 years ago, most of us all slept in the same room anyways, because most families did not have a second room, even less so a room for a baby on their own. And so I've done some things with my daughter that have worked and that I'm comfortable with, but I'm sure there's a lot more I can do. So I really want to get into the advice that you can provide us, but I also want to get that discussion out of the way. There's a lot of parents who worry about attachment theory, who worry that this is selfish. What can you say towards those anxieties?
I want to bring back a point that you said. You said your mom said when you grew up, you did it, right? The way our parents parented and the way our grandparents parented, I think, looked a little different. They had more maybe of a village. Maybe they had more time. Maybe not. Like, I know my mom was a working mom, but grandma was there and she had help. And like the way we parent, I feel like we're standing alone in the world. And when we find ourselves sleepless at night, get up, go to work, come back home, it's hard. And I find that at that point, sleep training is not an answer for everybody. It's an answer for somebody who is struggling with something more than just like, you know, I want my child to be the perfect sleeper. Like when I did it, I actually, like, at some point I grabbed my son and I threw him on the bed and I was like, why don't you just sleep? You find yourself being the mom that you do not want to be. You don't have the patience. You don't have the strength. Like, you're sleep deprived. I make sure that I never try to convince a mom to sleep train, because if you do believe that this is going to affect your attachment to your child, if this is going to affect any kind of relationship that you have with your child, I don't try to convince them. I know that when I was doing my certification, I did a lot of research, and there has been no proof that sleep training affects the attachment between mom and child. So to me, I'm comfortable with the process, and I've done it with two of my kids. So I offer it as a solution to moms who have found themselves in a situation that is no longer sustainable. It's one answer to one situation or a set of situations. Now, in terms of like the stress and the anxiety that comes with it, of course, it's not an easy process. It really isn't. You're doing something that may not seem intuitive to you. We talk about stress in different ways. There is a stress that we need to kind of learn something. If you drop your kid off at nursery, are they going to cry the first day? Probably. Are they going to cry the second day? Probably. You know, it takes time to adjust to something. And for me, sleep training kind of falls in that same category. And I always make sure that in the plan, that we have an action plan for the parents to do to support their child through this, whatever they're comfortable with. If it means going in and checking on them and physically like doing whatever they need to do to kind of feel better and to make the child feel, yes, let's do that. We choose a set of responses that makes everybody feel better.
So I'm not a parent, so I have zero information or stakes. I have my 8 hours of sleep every night. So I'm really coming at this from the outside looking in. And the other day I was with a friend and she has a 10-month-old and he was so cranky and he was crying. And I was like, why is he crying? She's like, she wants to sleep. I was like, can he just sleep? And it's like, no, you have to train the baby to sleep. And I was thinking, we also train kids to go to the potty. So we potty trained them. And so sleep training is also something else that we need to do. But when we potty train kids, it's a process, right? So they'll still wet themselves or poop their pants or whatever. So when you sleep train kids, is it like all of a sudden they'll sleep through the night every night? Or is it like a process, like ups and downs? Will they become angelic all of a sudden? Or is it, no, it's not. That's not the case.
It's not. And that's something that I say all the time. Like, sleep training is not a pill they're going to take and all of a sudden they're going to be perfect sleepers. Sleep is not linear. There are so many things that affect sleep. I sleep train my kids very young and still we have some nights they're sick, something hurts, or they're going through some development, or they're anxious about something. I have an 11-year-old. If he's anxious about something the next day, he's not going to sleep. You can teach a child to sleep, because sleep itself is a function that's innate to us. But we kind of have to do certain things to fall asleep, whether it's read a book or lay in bed or wash my face and put my pajamas on. You kind of mentally prepare yourself for sleep. And we start relying on these things. Like, some people cannot sleep if they don't have this certain pillow under them or this certain blanket on them or something. And with kids, it's the same. They look around them and they're looking at routines and they're looking at patterns. And they're trying to figure out their world all the time through these patterns. And so when they see a pattern that comes with sleep, that's what they're going to want. That's how I fall asleep. I wait until X, Y, and Z happens so that I can fall asleep.
Just like how I need to doom scroll on TikTok for 30 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Otherwise, my brain is still making slides.
Yeah, it's still working.
So you said something about the age at which you can deep train someone. When does one start? Is it after the fourth trimester? Is it when they're 1 year old? I remember my mother saying, your daughter's going to be different when she turns 3 months. And it was true. Like she, not from sleep perspective necessarily, but from a lot of other elements, it felt like her development had reached a big milestone. So when is a good time to start? But also, is it ever too late?
It's never too late, first of all, because you're putting together or you're establishing healthy sleep habits, and that it's never too late to do that. I know that there are sleep training programs for adults as well, just so you can have the proper sleep hygiene. When is it the right time to start? It's basically when mom has reached that it's no longer sustainable point. That's probably the best time to start because that's when you're ready to do it. Biologically, I don't start sleep training before 4 months just because their circadian rhythms are not mature before that point until they go through the 4 month sleep regression. And so sleep training before then, it just doesn't make sense to do it when their sleep cycles are not even the same as what they will be in a few weeks. What you can do, however, and I said you start sleep training when mom has reached the non-sustainable point, she doesn't actually have to do that. You can work from the beginning to establish those habits slowly and steadily. Because like you said, at 6 weeks, there's like a milestone. At 3 months, there's a milestone. At 4 months, there's always more learning and more development, which allows you to do certain things. And it allows you to start establishing those habits from the beginning so that hopefully you won't need to sleep train.
I feel like sleep training is a lifelong thing. I feel like at 33, I hit a milestone and I know what I need to do in order to go to sleep. Lights off, book in bed,
yeah.
Podcast, whatever. But speaking of environment, like what would be your ideal tips for the environment? So maybe we'll go like question by question, like give you sure. different topics and you can give us your one sentence advice.
Hot tips. Yes.
Yeah, hot tips. So I'm going to start with bedtime/wake time consistency.
Yes. That sets your rhythm right. Your circadian rhythms control a lot of what goes on in your body. So waking up at the same time and sleeping at the same time sets you up for when you're going to get hungry, when baby's going to go to the bathroom, when they're going to get sleepy again. All of that gets set from when you wake up.
Sleep time routines. We've heard a million things. Books, not books. Bath before or after food. Dim light. Play or don't play. Run around the house or don't. What are the 5 things we need to know?
Bedtime routines, they're your time to wind your baby down. You also want to make sure that you fill their emotional tank, especially with kids who sleep through the night, that you put them in their bed and you see them the next day. You want to fill their emotional tank then. You want to do activities that are fun for you. We've been doing bedtime routines for years. You're going to be doing this every night for a long time. So if you don't want to wash baby every day, don't do that. If you don't want to read a book every day, don't do that. If you don't want to read 10 books every day, just limit it to one. Do what works for you. And make sure that it's something that's predictable so that your child can know that after we have dinner, read a book, say goodnight, turn the lights out, that's when sleep is. Are those 5 things? I feel like maybe not.
Okay, next question. And I say this by observation. I feel like kids are always napping. So does napping in the day, is that important for a full night's sleep?
Yes, yes, yes. Napping is key. Napping is the most important piece of your puzzle because night sleep and day sleep mirror each other. If they're sleeping well during the day, they're going to sleep well during the night. Having said that, there is not an unlimited number of hours of sleep that they can get. So if you're throwing all your sleep at nap time, that's going to make your night shorter. And if you're throwing all your sleep at night, it's going to make your day shorter. So you want to split them the right way.
All right. The room, the bed. When should one move their kid to a toddler bed or a floor bed? Should they be covered or not? What's the right temperature? Give me all the details.
So the room. Children under 12 months should sleep in a crib that's there for safety reasons on just a flat mattress. No covers. If you need to cover, put a sleep sack on. Now, should they sleep in parents' room? The American Academy of Pediatrics, and I think the Lullaby Trust in the UK, also recommend that they sleep at least the first 6 months sharing their parents' room. Again, for safety reasons. Now, when should they move to their own room? That's entirely up to the parents. There's no rule. It's when you're ready, when your child is ready, when you feel that you're impacting each other's sleep, that's also a good time to kind of go to your own room, moving to their own bed. That I recommend you wait until they go to university. No, I'm kidding. I recommend you wait until they're 3 years old. And I say that because children under the age of three lack the impulse control to stay in bed if they wake up. So as long as they're in a crib and they are in a safe space, they're not going to get out and come see you. But once you open those gates, it's going to be a lot easier if they wake up in the middle of the night, especially if they're not independent sleeper. If they're falling asleep with you at the beginning of the night, they're going to look for you in the middle of the night and they're going to come find you. So instead of you being in control of going there, they're going to come into your room, they're going to start sneaking into your bed, and you go into a whole set of different issues.
Damn, I failed that one.
If it's working for you, it's fine. You know,
I'll tell you what I think has worked for my daughter. Because she used to wake up when she was in the crib, scream her lungs out so that we would come to her. So I did two things. I put her in a toddler bed that she can come out of, and I removed the gate from her room. And strangely enough, now that she has control over when she can come to us, she doesn't wake up as often. It's fascinating.
With older kids, it's a whole new ball game. With older kids, you need to give them some ownership of the process.
Yeah.
You need to convince them that that's what they want to do. You need to give them the confidence that they can do it. Yes, you can sleep in your bed. Yes, you can, when you wake up, stay in your bed and do the following. Wiggle your toes, count to 10, like whatever it is that, but you need to give them that kind of
the tools
to know what to do when they wake up in the middle of the night.
Nice.
Temperature, in terms of safe sleep, a lower temperature is encouraged so that babies don't overheat. Now, our bodies also drop in temperature to fall asleep. So you don't want to overheat baby and make it harder for them to drop their body temperature. So always make sure that their cheeks are not flushed, that they're not sweating, and that you're not testing that based on their extremities, because those always run cooler. Always check in their chest and in their neck to see if they're warm.
I don't have a kid, so I keep comparing myself to babies in these questions. So
the next question is probably true for adults too.
Most probably. So my next question is, I love a good midnight snack, but whenever I have a midnight snack, my sleep is shit because I feel like I'm digesting while sleeping. Is it the same for babies, like feeding before sleeping? But also, I know a lot of toddlers like to drink milk. So what are your tips on that?
Our digestive systems and our sleep, everything is run by our circadian system. So if one's working in overdrive, it's definitely affecting the other one. Before bed snack or a bottle, that's okay, as long as you give them a little bit of time to like kind of digest it before they go to bed. I know a lot of babies fall asleep with the bottle. Bigger than the digestive problems is that falling asleep with a bottle causes some teeth issues, like cavities, and sometimes it causes inner ear issues. So that causes ear infections. So I don't recommend that kids fall asleep drinking a bottle, but it doesn't hurt to kind of have a cup of milk before they go to bed and then do their routine and go to sleep. I'm going to get on my little soapbox. I like to separate feeding from sleeping. We don't wake up in the middle of the night and get a snack in our bed.
Speak for yourself, Lemmy.
Some people might, but it's important to start separating these things. We eat at the dining table and then we sleep in the bed, and that makes great relationships with both separately.
Absolutely. No, I definitely agree with that. Although I do always have a snack next to my bed, just saying. Okay, last question in this series, and that's one I'm not going to say guilty of, because there's nothing wrong with it, but concerns me directly, which is, you know, whether or not you should be present when your child falls asleep. Is it good or bad? And also, if you did want to teach them to no longer need you, what would you do?
I don't think it's bad if it's good for you. If it's not broken, why are we going to try and fix something? I've actually had a client that did not want to leave her child's room until he fell asleep. And that's okay if that's what you want to do. Just don't expect them to wake up in the middle of the night and not find you there and be okay with that. Like it would be the same if I fell asleep in my bed and woke up in my kitchen every day. That's the same as babies who are held or breastfed, or they don't like surprises in the middle of the night. And I think part of the reason we wake up in the middle of the night is to kind of be like, is everything okay? Is everything the same? Okay, I'm going to go back to sleep. But when they do wake up, mom's not there, or the bottle's not there, or the breast's not there, or whatever it is that they fell asleep using. Now, depending on the child's age, and I guess this could work for all of them, like for children that are older that want mom to sit with them in the room, first of all, it's important to talk to them about it. Mommy's going to go to her room. Mommy's going to go watch TV. Mommy's going to whatever it is that you do, because you're not going to sleep now. You're going to sleep later. And so you explain to them, you model that behavior with their dolls, with their toys, put it in pictures, and just kind of use all the ways that would get the message across to them. And then probably the most seamless way to do this is to gradually get out of that room. You don't have to get out of the room that first day. If you're laying next to your baby, you can sit next to your baby. And then you can sit on a chair next to their bed. And then you can move that chair slowly until you get out of the room. It kind of sets them up on that, I can do this on my own. They don't physically need you anymore. You're not physically laying next to them.
So follow-up question to that, because there are two parents and sometimes more adult caregivers. How important is it that we're all exactly aligned on the process?
You don't have to be identical. Children do a really good job of differentiating between caretakers, but you do have to be consistent. You can't be teaching her that this is how we sleep, and then dad comes and does things very differently. For her, it's mixed messages. Do we sleep like this or do we sleep like this? And it's also important for you when you say, we're going to do this, and you explain to her and you use the words to explain to her and she starts understanding, that you go back on your word and you start laying next to her again. Because that just confuses her. It tells her that those words, you didn't mean what you said and you didn't say what you meant.
Again, as an adult, we also need clear messages. I think we should just treat these kids like they're adults, you know, be clear.
Excellent advice, I think. You know, having a sleep trainer is something that a lot of us have considered and thought about. Sometimes that's really necessary, just like you need someone to help you exercise at the gym, or, you know, there's a lot of different routines and elements where you need support. But is it possible for parents to sleep train on their own? What would you recommend their approach be?
Yes. They can do it on their own. Definitely do it on their own. It's the abundance of information available is incredible. I'm not inventing anything when I work with a family. This is all something that I've gotten from books, that I've gotten from instructors who have worked with other families. So I'm not bringing any brand new information. Now, the way I synthesize it, the way I put it together, the way I can combine different methods, that's where my little secret sauce is. And the handholding and the coaching every day, that's also the piece that I add. But if you want to sleep train on your own, you can. What I would do is kind of go scour the internet for like Instagram accounts and stuff to see what are the families of sleep training that there are, and find the kind of way that appeals to you. Because where are we getting it from? From a book, from somebody. So if you like, for example, the Leave and Check, I would go buy Ferber's book and go through it. If you're more of an Extinction or Cry It Out, I would go buy Weissblum's book. If you are more the Gradual, I would go buy the Sleep Lady Shuffle. And most of them have actual step-by-step kind of how to do it and why you should do it. And troubleshooting like that, the Sleep Lady, she actually like, if this doesn't happen, then try that. And if this does, so it's really like, you can really get like a step-by-step kind of guidance. There's also a lot of consultants who have guides out there that you can just buy that are cheaper than one-on-one. I compare it to the person, if you go to IKEA and you buy the furniture and you like to assemble it yourself, then you're going to be the person who's going to go get the book or buy the guide. But if you're somebody who wants it assembled for you, then you want somebody to coach you one-on-one so that you can have a little cheerleader on the side that says, yay, you did this good, or no, let's recalibrate, let's fix this. This is not working.
Yeah. You need partners to be able to think through things. And as you say, accountability buddies and
accountability
support system. Absolutely. I think there's a lot of value in any element that you're trying to figure out and having someone who can coach you through it. And I guess my last question to you before we wrap up is, there's a lot of sleep shame, what I call sleep shaming. the parents of kids who happen to sleep really well be like, oh, your child still does this and still does that. Oh, mine stopped doing this when they were 4 months old and you're sleep deprived and very angry at them. So what's a good response, whether it's from your own mother, which will make you even more upset, or from someone in your community, what's a good response to sleep shaming?
I think sleep shaming and all the other shaming that comes with motherhood, I don't know why we do that to each other. I think it's fair to be like, I hear you, thank you very much, but this is working for my family. I wish I had the strength to say that in so many things when it came to feeding, to sleeping, to teaching basic things, to potty training. Like, I had somebody like shame me because my three-year-old was still in a diaper and I was like, we're working on it, you know, easy. We don't need to shame each other. Everybody, every child is different. Your child might be potty trained by the time they're 7 months old, but they're still not sleeping. And that's okay, because obviously what's important to me is not important to you. And what's important to you is less important to her. We can't have perfect kids in every aspect. For me, sleeping was so important, but then I potty trained late. You know, we don't need to do that. I hear you. Thank you very much. But this is what's working for my family. I think it's the best.
I feel like if someone shames a parent because of sleep, you should answer, oh, I think you need a nap. I think you woke up on the wrong side of the bed. Switch it on them. Does baby need a nap? Baby's cranky.
That's a great response.
Well, Rhea, I'm glad you learned a lot about how you can sleep better. Not that you needed it, because you've been sleeping just fine, if you ask me.
I've been sleeping just fine, but like all things in life, there are always areas of improvement. And so I'm very happy that Lamisa's advice, not only is it going to help the many parents, the many babies, but also the many adults, especially the single adults. And I say this to you as you are yawning very, very deeply.
I'm really happy for you, Rhea.
So let's take a step back before I tell you what I learned for myself as the parent in the room. What is one thing that Lemmy said that really spoke to you from our conversation with her?
I mean, I wouldn't say that it's something that I learned as much as it's something that I'd like to highlight, because I think sleep trainers and also other parents really don't say this enough, that there is no ultimate goal when it comes to your child's sleep, and there is no right or wrong. And I think it was lovely that she kicked us off with that and saying, having whatever sleep outcomes are relevant for you and your family. And for some families, that can continue to include co-sleeping. It can continue to include being present when your child falls asleep. It can mean a lot of things. There is no golden standard. There is no specific goal that one should want to achieve, but rather set the goals for your family that go with your own values and your own preferences. It was really wonderful that she kicked us off with that.
Two things that I took away from this conversation. Number one, sleep training not only benefits the kid, but also benefits the parents and allows the parents to have more energy for their day. Whether you're a working parent or not a working parent, I think it's reason enough for parents to want to sleep train their child because they want to get more sleep so they can be a more functioning human being. So I really appreciate that she said that, and that was her experience. And the second thing is, and I've seen you be like this as a mother, and if I ever am a mother, I would want to be like this as well, is the empathy for kids, even in the sleep training. Like when she said, imagine you fall asleep in your bedroom and then you wake up in your kitchen. You are going to feel super disoriented, super scared, frazzled. So it's the same with babies and toddlers and children. Mm-hmm. Like imagine Gabby goes to sleep, you're right next to her, and then she wakes up and you're gone. That's totally a very scary situation. So also understanding that and being empathetic with your child is a big step in sleep training. And I really appreciated when she said that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think another thing that she said that I really resonated with, you know, when we asked her what is the right sleep routine, right? Like pre-sleep routine, she said that it's whatever routine you as a parent enjoy, And it reminded me of a discussion that we had in a previous episode where we talked about children's books. And you asked me, how, Marilyn, do you choose the books that your daughter is going to read? And I was like, well, first, I choose a book that I'm going to enjoy reading. And the truth is, it is a shared process. We tend to maybe sometimes also make it very central around the child themselves. But it should be something you enjoy. Otherwise, you won't be able to keep it up. And I think a big part of good sleep is a routine that you are able to maintain. That's again comes to speak to the importance of just caring for yourself in that process and not just making it about whatever your child wants and only them.
What has worked for you before we sign off? What does the routine look like and what has worked?
Yeah, so this is our routine and I still play around with it a little bit because in addition to creating a bedtime routine, I'm also trying to get her to stop drinking milk, which she loves. Generally, what we'll do is if she's hungry, like if she hasn't had a big lunch, we'll try to get her to have dinner by 5:30 or 6. And then we'll do bath time. We'll put on a pajama. We'll go to her room. We do dim the lights as soon as we near 5:30. So all over the house, we'll have dimmer lighting everywhere. We go to her room. We sit down. We read as many books as she wants. And so in our case, that can sometimes be 10, 12, however many books are there. And then the last book we read every night is Good Night Moon. When that's done, you know, because in Good Night Moon, they also say good night light. And so one of us, and I'll ask her and I say, do you want to turn off the light or do you want mommy to turn off the light? Depending on the evening, she'll decide. And then we turn off the light. She comes to bed. We sing songs. We have a couple of like night songs, which are in French, Au clair de la lune, and then Fais dodo. We sing those in the dark. I don't mind cuddling her for as long as she wants, but I try to be sitting, not sleeping. And I do tell her very explicitly that I am going to walk away when she sleeps, that I won't be in the room when she wakes up. Something else that has really, really worked, and I learned this in a book and it's called The No Cry Sleep Solution, is integrating bedtime stories that include the main character going to bed and they end up sleeping alone in their bed. And I do make sure to point that out to her and be like, look, mama, you know, monster is sleeping with her teddy bear. And because until the age of one, it's dangerous to have stuffed animals and so on in the crib with her. She also didn't have any attachment to any particular like stuffed animal. So the other thing that we did that also worked well is to help her attach to a teddy bear, which now never leaves our sight and is always somewhere hanging out, but is a way for her to soothe when she wakes up at night.
Shout out to Marcel.
Marcel is my fave. And I also did something really smart and I bought 4 others and they're sitting in a drawer somewhere in their bag. And if Teddy, Marcel, were ever to disappear, we have replacements. Sorry, honey, if you're listening to this podcast in 20 years, I love you. I had to do this to you. Otherwise, it would have been hell. I do hope you don't lose Marcel, but if you do, we have backup.
And you're currently in possession of Marcel 5.
We want to thank Lamise for coming on the show and sharing her incredible advice with us. I want to thank myself and my daughter for making me sleep deprived. And I want to thank you, Raya, and our beautiful producer in Bahrain, Ahmed, who put this episode together.
And if our listeners want to learn more about Lamise and her work and about sleep training, they can follow her on Instagram on @_12sleep. So _ONE 2SLEEP. And you can also learn more about her on her website, 12sleep.com, spelled the same way as the Instagram.
This was Things My Mother Didn't Tell Me, But My Best Friend Did, a spin-off of Who Run the World. I'm Marilyn.
And I'm Rhea.
New episodes of Who Run the World drop every Wednesday, so make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, yes, you heard that right, or wherever you listen to your podcast so you don't miss an episode. And of course, don't forget to rate and review the show and follow us on Who Run the World Pod on both Instagram and TikTok. Until next time.